If I could save time in a bottle, yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away.
If only we could save it in a bottle, get some more of it on our side, turn it back. We talk about it, we spend it, we worry about it, we waste it, and yet we are forced to live into it. I bet there's no adult or young person in this room that doesn't wish they had a little bit more of it. Many of us struggle with how to best use it. But the fact is, we all have the same 24 hours a day. Time is the greatest resource that we have ever been given. And it is also the great leveler. You may have less money than someone, less financial resources, less talent, less influence, less spiritual gifts, but you don't have less time than anyone. You might be saying, well, that's not true, MJ, because some of us, our time is cut short. We don't live the normal 75 to 80-ish plus years that we would hope for. Well, what I'm talking about is the time in your daily grind, that week-to-week activity that rhythms your life. You have the same 86,400 seconds in a day to turn it all around or to throw it all away. We all have the same amount of time. And also, it's not something that you're going to be able to make more of. It is not a renewable resource, if you will. Once an hour goes by, like this hour that you're going to spend with us, you're never going to get that back. You can leave this space and you can go down to Woody's and share a lunch with your family and pay the server $43.76, and immediately she's going to debit it out of your account. You're going to be able to get that back, because maybe this Friday or the next Friday, you or your spouse is going to get a paycheck deposited back into your account for not just $43.76, I would hope, but that including some more money. So you're going to be able to get back the money that you spent at that Woody's lunch. You're never going to get back the time that you spent gathered around the table. Once it's gone, it's gone. It's a wonderful, crazy, exciting thing to think about, but it's also a little bit scary and daunting to think that time is not something that you can ever give back. And once it's gone, once your expiration date has expired, it's gone. And I'm not saying that to scare you. I'm saying that to remind you that life is literally like a vapor. I was reminded of that this morning when Graham Ray asked me to pray for somebody. And he started telling me the story. And it involved us. Me and Kim and Will were at Glory Bound this past Wednesday after a meeting downtown. And Graham was there with his partner playing. And during the set change, he came by to say hello. And of course, he can't just come say hello to us. Everyone flocks to the table to say hello to him. And one of those people that came to say hello to him is David King. I'd never met him before, but he had saw on Graham's Facebook page him sharing the Live at 11 testimony that he gave last week. And he said, man, where is that church? I'd love to come to it. And of course, I was sitting there and I was like, great, it's 1111 St. Paul East Campus. He was like, I'll come check it out one time. And so, sorry, Graham, but I had to one-up him with the, well, Nashville's coming to town next week. Brandon Green's going to be here with Graham. So next week, this week, today would be a great time for you to come. He was like, I'm there. I'm totally there. He's not here because he's in intensive care right now, fighting for his life. Complication due to diabetes. He's non-responsive. His family doesn't know if he can make it. So I ask you to remember David in your prayers and to use this as an example of what I'm trying to say. We don't know what kind of time we have left. Once it's gone, it's gone. It's a valuable thing. And so because it's such a valuable thing, I think we don't think about this a lot. It's even more valuable than money, because you can make more money. You just can't make more time. Sure, we have to have money to live. We need a roof over our head, and we need food on the table, and we need the necessities of life. And I would say a lot of us are interested in the niceties of life. But after that point, basically, you can keep making more money for yourself. You can't keep making more time. And because of this, I think we're a time-obsessed culture, and maybe rightfully so. There's countless self-help books. You just Google time management, and you'll get hundreds of entries, people trying to tell you how to live your best life, how to manage your time. And it got to me thinking about time as a resource. You know, we're talking about how do we serve, how do we go Jesus our world. And have you ever thought about the fact that time is perhaps your greatest resource you've been given to go Jesus your world? And as I began to study this, I did a little word search and realized that time is mentioned 700 times in the Bible. Seems pretty significant to me. If the Bible is going to mention 700 times time, maybe we should start listening to what the Bible thinks about time. And probably the best place to start thinking about time is just right there in the beginning, when God created it. You know, the moon to rule over the night and the sun to rule the day. In Genesis 1, 3 through 5, God says, "Let there be light," and there was light. And the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening and morning that first day. So when God created day and night, he created a rhythm of life, a time of life, if you will. And so beginning in this third verse, we are told that God has created the days for us. He has created time, a finite amount of it, for humanity. And you might be saying, well, why would God do that? Why would an infinite God set up parameters for us to live into a finite world where time matters? Could it be that the gift of time that he's been given us is a wonderful thing that, when properly used and respected to its fullest, it can help us order our lives? Or we may feel, or I'd feel a lot of times, like Cootie, time, why are you punishing me? It's just all in the way you are leveraging this of your greatest resources. Then later in Genesis chapter 1, we read that God has put humanity in charge of everything, not just the birds and the animals, but time. We are to be stewards over everything in God's green earth. And so today's question for you, as we continue our How Do We Serve Like Jesus series, is, are you making the most of the time that you've been given? Are you Jesusing your world with your time? Wait for it. Are you living like you are dying? Yes, there are so many songs about time. I don't think any of us want to get to the end of our lives and realize we have wasted this precious resource that I hope I've described to you as being even more precious than gold. Wasted it staying angry and bitter, or worrying, or the thief of all joy, comparing your life to other people, or allowing fear to control and dictate your life, or having your eyes set on earthly things that you miss the heavenly things, or being addicted to this Americana lifestyle of hurry and rush. It is up to us. We are the stewards of this gift of time, and it is our job to manage it properly. And God determined for us the way to manage it properly, and he spells it out pretty clearly in the beginning of Genesis. Again, we're just in Genesis 2, chapter 2, verses 2 through 3, and he sets a pattern for us. You're going to work 6 days, and then you're going to rest. That's the way God created the earth. Now, did he create it like that way because he needed a rest? I don't think so. I don't think God got to the seventh day and was like, oh man, I'm so tired. I just got to take a little break. I need some Netflix. No, I think he was trying to set a pattern for humanity that are bound by time. He's trying to say, this is the way you live. You work, and then you've got to do some recreating and some renewing and some resting. You've got to honor the Sabbath. This rhythm is how we have a healthy life. Do your work and then rest. Create and then recreate. And it's funny, like, we know this, but we don't really believe it, I guess, because the way we act doesn't, you wouldn't think that we believe this. People that are sleep deprived or not getting enough rest, all kinds of things happen to them. Their blood pressure goes up. They are more prone to heart disease. They actually die sooner, those that are not getting enough rest. And then things go on from a mood standpoint. Anxiety is produced. Depression. You Google it. You'll see what I'm talking about. People that are not resting are not fully living into this recreation that God would have us to live into. And so this rhythm was set by God to have a healthy lifestyle. And then when you flip over to the New Testament, it's echoed again there. When God came down to earth and bound himself by time, okay, he didn't have to be bound by time. He was in eternity, but he made the choice to come down and bind himself by time. This is how he practices Sabbath rest. That immediately in Matthew 14, 22, he had just calmed the storm, walked on the water, did all these amazing feats. And so right after that, he made the disciples get in the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side. He's calling them away from the work and the worry of the crowds. And then he dismisses them and goes up to the mountainside by himself to pray. And then that later that night, he was alone again. This is throughout the gospel accounts. One more, we'll just look at Mark 1:35. Very early in the morning, he chose to invest some time waking up early while it was still dark, leaving the house, meaning leaving all of his friends and whoever he was hanging out with, and going to a quiet place where he can pray. And so my question is, if Jesus withdrew by himself and asked his disciples to withdraw to him to get rest, if Jesus had the time to pull away from his busy ministry schedule to pray and reconnect with his Father and his closest friends, we are kind of without an excuse. Because I'm sorry, I don't care how busy I think I am, I'm not as busy as Jesus. And so many of us end up feeling frustrated in our lives because we are so busy that we cannot hear the voice of God. We cannot figure out what it is God is wanting from us. A few weeks ago, I did a sermon on hearing God's will. And so pastor and author John Ortberg addresses this in a great book. It's called The Life You've Always Wanted. He shares this time when he was not able to hear the voice of God. Okay, and he asks a treasured friend, a spiritual mentor, you know, I just want to hear God. I want to deepen my spiritual walk. I don't know how. And the response, it wasn't, well, John, you need to read your Bible more, go worship more, start serving more, give more to the community, join a small group. Although all these things can help you build deeper spiritual roots, what he said was, you must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. A hurried lifestyle is the enemy of a close relationship with God. And so, as I was preparing for this sermon this week, this is turning into my imagination. And yesterday, God likes to show up in funny ways. He just stung me so bad in a most unlikely place. I had gotten up and I was going to go to the gym. I had a friend text me, are you going to be at spin class? And I had already made a choice to meet my sister downtown to help her shop for some pink jeans to wear to the Taylor Swift concert. After about six stores, we finally found one pair of pink jeans. And so I was supposed to follow her to her house to help her get Bella's hair done for the Taylor Swift concert. And I had a little bit of extra time, or so I thought. So I was like, I'm going to swing into the nail shop and get them to redo my nails really quickly because they look terrible. She'd informed me of that as we were checking out. You really need to get your nails done. So I like sisters for that. And so I pull in and there's someone that's doing my nails that's never done my nails before. And she's like, ooh, you really need a full set, a new set. And I was like, I know I need a full set. I know, but I just need you to fill these in because I'm in a hurry. And she's like, no, I don't know. They're not going to look good. And I was like, it's okay. I'm not going to blame you. I understand they're like seriously overgrown. I need a full set, but just this one time, just, can you just fill them in and do your best job? And so she starts doing the preliminary work to get them to where that she can fill them in. And finally she just breaks down and she's just like, I don't know if I do this and you get an infection and you come back and blame me. I'm like, infection? Blame you? I was like, fine. I don't want to argue with you. Just take them off. And so as she's popping them off, she cuts all my nails really short. And I was like, okay, now I really don't have time to do a full set. So just paint my nails. And she's like, no, I feel so bad. I didn't mean that. And I'm like, look, I don't know. Just paint my nails and I'll go and it's fine. Well, then me, I'm always pushing for more time. I'm like, well, I didn't get a full set and I've got 25 more minutes to get to Bella. Can you just paint my toes really quick too? And so she's painting my toes and she's like, you really need a pedicure. Like, I know I need a pedicure and I know I need a full set. I'll be back in a couple weeks. And she was like, you know, every time I see you, okay, this is scary because she's never been the person that usually serves me. She's like, every time I see you, you come in here in such a rush. You rush in and you rush out and you never have time for yourself. Ouch. I'm writing a sermon about margin and time, and the nail shop lady is telling me I'm too busy to get a full set. It was like God is just like, woo, take your own medicine. And so God definitely has a sense of humor, but sometimes it's not very much what I want to hear. And so for me, if you know me, I've got to learn how to leverage my time better to go Jesus my world. Because I'm not a very good manager of my time. I try to pack too much into my day. And so if time is a resource, arguably the most precious resource, if we're going to live into the commands of Jesus, how he wants us to live, we are all going to have to learn to be better managers of this very valuable resource. And so the way I think that we're going to be able to manage this resource better is to figure out what we're actually supposed to be doing with our time. Matthew 22, 37 through 39 boils down all the Torah law. Everything that God ever said that you needed to do is boiled down in this one little statement. And we all know this statement. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like this, love your neighbor," and we forget this part, "as yourself." And so if we are living a life following God, we are loving our God with everything that we have, and we are loving ourselves, and we are loving our neighbor. This is the goal of life. And so when God decided to tell us how to live our life, he knew we could not obey those 600 plus Torah laws. And so he boiled it down to this, cut out a lot of time for us, and said, "This is the heart of the matter. I'm going to gift you with a time and a life, the time of your life, and this is what I would have you do." And so day to day, we get to make choices to demonstrate, are we being wise stewards or foolish stewards of the time we've been given? And I fool myself every day thinking I'm too important to stop and rest, or I'm too busy to stop and help somebody. I put my agenda before God's agenda, because I think once it goes in my little Google Keep, it's there and I've got to do it. I've got to follow through until it is done. And so the hard truth is we are getting to decide how we use our time. We make time for what we deem is important and necessary, and time being our greatest investment, if we do not value it more, we're going to waste it away. And so I think a great starting point for making these proper investments of time the way Jesus would want us to do is to value the most important relationships God has given us. Relationships need our time to stay healthy. And I'm preaching to the choir here. Anyone knows if you have a relationship with someone, you've got to invest some time and energy into it. And this is one thing that Eddie and I do get right. We have blocked off, if you know us very well, a scheduled date day. On Fridays, that is our day together. We started this when Duke was in four-year-old preschool. We would drop him off at preschool at 9, and from 9 to noon, while he was at preschool, we would go have a date, and then we would pick him up at 12 and usually eat at this Mexican restaurant where we would buy him a little tattoo, and he would be on his way when we would head back to the house and play around, hang out with him until the other kids got out. And as they got older and got into grade school, our date got bigger. A few months ago, at the end of the last school year, we were at the Oyster House, Half Shell, here in Biloxi, and we walked out, and we noticed there was a new beignet shop, Le Café Beignet, and Eddie was like, "Hey, you want to go try their beignets?" And I'm like, "That's not really worth the calories. If I was going to have a beignet, I'd want a Café du Monde beignet." And he was like, "Well, what's stopping us? Let's just go." And so we got in the car, we had the time, drove over to New Orleans, had some beignets, and came back and made it back by the time the kids got out of school. Just on Friday, I'm trying to train for a triathlon, a sprint one, the very short ones, and part of it is like a 17-mile bike ride, which is not bad, but the problem is this dreaded Dolphin Island Bridge. I have been Googling it and looking at it in horror, thinking of going over it, and I had almost decided I'm just not going to be able to do it. I'm sorry, I just cannot go down that. And Leonard is in our community, and he was like, "MJ, you just use your gears. It's no big deal. You can do it." And so Eddie was like, "Why don't we go over to Dolphin Island on Friday, 2 days ago, and we'll just test it out. We'll see if you can get over the bridge without having a nervous breakdown." And so we did. We went over the bridge and back over it. And I live to tell about it. I'm here preaching. And actually going up was much worse than coming down. So pro tip, if you're going to try to do the Dolphin Bridge, don't underestimate the up. And so, and in this way, we work on our relationship, and it takes time to work on our relationship. The same is true with your relationship with God. Your relationship with people, it's logical to you, it takes time in order to make it more intimate and better. Well, if you want a relationship with God, it's going to take time to make it more intimate and better. And so over time, it's like an incremental amount. You spend time with God, and you spend time with the people that God has put in your life that you are closest to, and then you start using that the excess of your, of course, you have to work, I mean, all that kind of boring stuff, but then you've got to start figuring out what it is God wants you to do to go serve your world with all this excess time that you have. You're maybe saying, but MJ, I don't have any excess time. I am living to the full, I am like drawing off the page of my life. I have no margins. I'm right there with you, sister. I've got the nail shop lady's scolding eyes to prove how I feel about my life being not lived in margins. And so there's a book I'd like to recommend to you and to me. I've read it before, but I'm going to read it again. It's by a doctor. It's called Margin. Restoring, listen to all this stuff, emotional, physical, financial, time reserves to an overloaded life. And this doctor goes on to describe these 16 prescriptions he gives you if you're feeling like your life is being lived outside of the margins and you don't have time to go Jesus your world because you don't even have time to make dinner. So he's going to help you with that. There are 16 things, prescriptions for curing this addicted to hurry. We're not going to go over all of them, but I thought maybe by suggesting this book, you could grab it on your Kindle today and start working on this margin problem. But we're going to go over a couple of them that I thought were kind of really important. Expect the unexpected is his first prescription for living a margin life. Our days, if you're like me, rarely go like we expect them to do. And so if you have like packed in appointment after an appointment, you have left no room for something unexpected to happen. Like the nail shop lady who refused to fill in your old nails and demand you do a new set. If you are not expecting the unexpected, you're not going to be able to navigate your calendar very well. So margin needs to be built into your daily calendar. 20 or so extra minutes, 30, whatever you feel comfortable before this appointment. And then 20 or 30 or so extra minutes on this end. And then this wonderful thing starts to happen. You find yourself having time. And so then when God sends someone your way, you're not saying, oh, I can't help you because I'm late for my next appointment. You're able to stop for a minute because you're like, oh, I have 30 minutes that I normally don't have. And so expecting the unexpected instead of blocking out every hour, every second, every millisecond of your day is one of his first prescriptions. And then he says you're going to have to do something that we rarely do or want to do. We're going to have to learn to say no. There are 100 great things that you could probably do this week, but your schedule, if you're being honest with yourself, you're only going to be able to do about 10 of those things. So you're going to have to do the hard work of telling 90 people, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Don't make excuses for yourself. Don't explain to them your whole life story. A simple no will do. Just, I'm sorry, I can't be involved in that, or I can't do that. Whatever you want to say, I can't, I won't, I'm not gonna, because you're trying to guard that time that we just talked about to expect the unexpected. Then the next thing, I think this is really funny. This book was written in 2004, and so one of his big examples of how to get your life back in line is to turn off the TV. Well, I would say turning off the TV is a great idea, but how about just letting go of your smartphone? Just get off of Facebook for just one hot second, and you will get back lots of time. Number four is hard if you have kids, but he suggests that you prune the activity branches of your life. Our lives get to be a tangled branches, especially if we have kids and managing their little lives. But he suggests that every time a new opportunity comes your way, like you've got this new activity that you're going to be involved in, even if it's a great activity, you need to examine your life and figure out, what thing am I going to remove to make time for this new thing? Because if your life is already jam-packed and you just keep adding new things upon new things without culling things out, eventually you're not going to have any more time. And then he suggested practicing simplicity and contentment. The fewer material possessions you have, the less you have to maintain, he suggests. Clutter ends up eating our time because we're having to manage all this clutter and chaos. Another great resource, I don't know why this sermon is filled with all these resources, but the life-changing magic of tidying up. This is like Dave Ramsey level. If you've ever done Dave Ramsey, he's crazy with his envelope system, right? So this is like the Dave Ramsey crazy version of getting rid of clutter in your life. But it is totally magical and life-changing if you're willing to follow this process. And then finally, something I really appreciated that he said is you've just got to make yourself available. What does that look like? If you do not have enough margin, we cannot be available to God. And this is how it really ties into going and Jesusing your world. Bonhoeffer, a very famous theologian, said, we must allow ourselves to be interrupted by God. God wants to put people in our paths as little minor interruptions that we can help along their way. But if we are too busy with ourselves and our schedule, and if we have so much going on in our lives that we don't even, not only can we not stop and help them, we don't even notice them passing by us because we're so focused on getting to the next place. You think you don't have anything to give people. You say, I'm not as talented as Kim. I can't hold a book on my head and preach a sermon. You know, I don't have as much resources as somebody else. I have no spiritual gifts. I can't pray with somebody. Well, everybody can offer somebody their time. Have you ever considered this fact that time, as I've tried to describe today, is your greatest resource? And so it is the first and best thing that you could give somebody when you're trying to Jesus your world. You can offer them your time, but you can't do that until your time is back in balance, which stings. No one can manage your time except you. You are the author and director of your life. You are the steward of the gift of time. It's like you have this checking account of time, and you get to decide where it's debited to. Jesus said, we will be known by our fruits. And I left the nail shop yesterday saying, Jesus, I don't want to be known as the crazy lady that runs in and out of the nail shop, not having time to sit down and get a full set. I want to be known as someone that is investing my time wisely, like a wise investor would. I want to be known as someone that is trying to do the greatest commandment, which is know my God. Get to know my God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength. And then leveraging this life that he's given me to help other people know that God too. I want to leave enough margin in my life that I can be interrupted by God with a tailor-made opportunity that I know that he's wanting to gift me with. And I can't do that, and you can't do that unless you're managing your time appropriately. So that's my prayer for you today. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this community that gathers here with us, spending this time, this hour together with you. I just ask that you help us to be the best stewards of the gift of time that we can be. Help us to leverage this gift in a mighty way and surprise us, interrupt our lives with opportunities to go Jesus our world. As we free up our time, we're saying yes to you to send somebody into our life that we could help. It is in your most holy name we do pray.
Creation sings your praises, so will I. out of creation, speak in vain, a syllable empty of void. For once you have spoken, all nature and science follow the sound of your voice. And as you speak, 100 billion creatures catch your breath, evolving in pursuit of what you said. It all reveals your name so alive. I can see your heart in everything you say. Every painted sky and canvas of your grace. Creation still obeys you so alive. Failures and pride. On a hill you created the light of the world, abandoned in darkness to die. And as you speak, 100 billion failures disappear. Where you lost your life so I could find it here. If you left the grave behind you so alive, I can see your heart and everything you've done. Every part, design, work of art called love. If you gladly chose surrender so alive, I can see your heart 1 billion different ways. Every precious one, a child you died to save. If you gave your life to love them so alive.